search of a sky for smoke to rise to. Written by Black Cat and read by Corey Cathonia. Rated for teen and up audiences, and no archive warnings apply. For the fandom of Star Wars and the relationship of Padme Amidala / Arla Fett. Also including the character of Gar Saxon and the additional tags of alternate universe canon divergence, abusive relationships, past Padme Amidala, Anakin Skywalker, past abuse, hurt comfort, angst, flirting, new Mandalorian critical, Anakin Skywalker critical, and Bamf Padme Amidala. Sundari might not be far enough away. Nowhere is likely far enough away. But it's likely the last place anyone will expect Padme to go. Drawing her hood forward, Padme keeps her head down, her steps just quick enough to fall in with the crowd as they leave the transport. Handmaidens are meant to blend in, to move through the people of Naboo without drawing attention, so that the queen can slip away unnoticed if she has to. There's no reason for a handmaiden to be on Mandalore, particularly now, so that removes half the illusion, but Padme can go unnoticed if she needs to. It's harder in Sundari than most places she's tried, because there are so few aliens, and so many of the people are blonde in a way Padme can't replicate. The hood helps, and Padme keeps it up as she passes out of the port, trying to look like any other refugee seeking a neutral world to settle on. She has no real plan, fled in the middle of the night with only the bare essentials, but it's something. It's a brief spot of safety, as long as she can slip into obscurity, keep from being seen by anyone who might recognize her, either from the Separatists or the Republic. Anakin won't find her here. He won't. Curling her fingers in the strap of her rucksack, Padme casts a glance up towards the dome of the royal palace, high and shining above the city. She almost wants to go there, find Satine, but some crawling sense of doubt stops her. Too visible, but the way the new Mandalorians talk about rounding up and exiling the warriors from all the Mandalorian clans makes Padme think of the Gungans on Naboo, the wars, all the history between her people and theirs. Makes her think, too, of the camps the Naboo were put in when the Trade Federation took her home, and the thousands that died waiting for her to secure help from the Senate. With Ahsoka to keep an eye on, with a good face to put on for negotiations, she'd been able to swallow down her misgivings, but they never quite went away. Unease prickles, and Padme slips down a side street into a dimmer area of the city, older and a little less polished than the places around the palace. No one eyes her, but she still keeps her steps quick. There's a public tram ahead that she overheard a few of the other passengers mention, dotted with faces from the flight, but also a fair number of locals, and Padme finds an empty spot to stand near one of the windows, tugs her hood a little further forward, and braces herself as the tram pulls away. She doesn't know where she's going. The extent of her plan was to get to Sundari and try to find a room. Even some kind of job seems like a risk when she's given plenty of floor speeches in the Senate, when she was well known as a queen because of the invasion of Naboo. Any word of her anywhere, and she feels grimly, horrifically certain that Anakin will immediately drop everything and come and find her, drag her back. Padme won't go back. Not until Anakin is gone from the Order, gone from Coruscant, maybe gone from the galaxy entirely. She swallows, curling her fingers in the strap of her pack, and tries to keep her heart from racing just at the thought of him finding her. She'd known, always, that he was violent, but But so many things she should have noticed, seen, understood. Meeting a Tusken Jedi had brought every last bit of a carefully constructed lie crashing down around her. And she has no one to blame but herself. Padme closes her eyes, tips her head against the cool glass as she tries to gather her composure. Anakin will definitely try to find her, and Palpatine will help him. Palpatine always enables Anakin's worst tendencies, and even if Padme is collateral, he likely won't care at all. Even if everything the Republic should stand for is collateral, because Padme is certain that Anakin told Palpatine about Shmi and the Tuskens. Palpatine knows. And now the Jedi Council does as well. Padme lets her eyes slide open, watching the green edges of a park pass, and breathes out. The Jedi know, and the Jedi will deal with Anakin, even if it's not permanent. Even if they can't do anything of substance. But it's something. She believed Anakin so easily when he said the Tuskens were like animals. It had settled, like truth, like a mind trick, and she'd never questioned further. Between what Clegg said and what Anakin told her, the state of Shmi's body, Padme had believed every last word they told her about the Tuskens. Meeting a Tusken Jedi, kind and soft-spoken and honorable, had broken all of that to pieces around her. It's Padme's own fault. She hadn't looked, hadn't questioned, hadn't pressed, but some disquieting whisper deep in the back of her head wants to know if she would even have been able to question it the second she started asking Anakin anything about that day. And it's her greatest regret that she didn't. But at the same time, she's terrified of what could have happened if she had. Padme shivers, even though the day is warm, and pushes up. The tram is just coming to a stop at a platform right up against the park. There are plenty of people about, despite the early hour, but everything is a little more simple than the area by the spaceport. Less grand. Safer, Padme thinks, and she joins the handful of people leaving the car and then takes the steps down quickly, not liking being so visible. There's an inn at the far end of the street, a small building with a hand-painted sign, and Padme looks at it for several long moments before she turns away, keeps moving. It's too close. Too obvious. She can't risk it. Deep in a quiet, almost abandoned district, Padme finds a room for rent above a shuttered shop, the cost low enough that she won't have to worry about running out of credits too soon. The owner eyes her, but hands over the keys without much of a fuss and very little paperwork, and Padme climbs the stairs, locks the door, and collapses into the dusty bed to sleep, even though it's still mid-morning. She sleeps like the dead, and if she dreams at all, she thankfully doesn't remember any of it. When Padme wakes, the district is a little more lively. There are a handful of people on the street in the growing dusk, lights coming on up and down the block. It's not crowded by any means, and Padme sits in the window to brush out her hair, watching to see how many people pass. The main draw seems to be the bar across the street, and one down, its windows lit with neon. Padme watches a trickle of people enter as the hours stretch on, and a few leave. It's not rowdy by any measure, though, and if there's music playing, she can't hear it, which is a relief. Padme is just finishing, separating the strands of her hair to braid it, when loud laughter draws her eye back to the bar. There are a handful of people on the street, clearly friends by the way several of them are hanging off of each other, but Padme's attention is drawn to one of the women in the group. She's tall and broad-shouldered, her long blonde hair shaved on the sides, the rest of it tangled with beads and thin braids. Her face is almost familiar, but not quite. And it's a lovely face, scarred, lined from smiling, lit with humor as she laughs. Padme watches her lean on the shoulder of another woman, a brawny Tolothian with lavender patches across her dark skin, and can't help but smile a little. It's the first time she smiled since she fled Coruscant, since the fight with Anakin right before, and it feels good. The group moves on after several minutes, separating to go in different directions. The big blonde woman leaves with a wiry human woman, and Padme watches them come up the street towards her. The blonde laughs at something her companion says, turns. She crowds the other woman up against the wall, ducking her head as she braces her arms against the wall on either side of her, and the wiry woman smirks, tips her head. The blonde leans in, her hair falling to hide their faces, but arms come up, grip her shoulders, and when she lifts her head, the other woman looks dazed, breathless. It makes the blonde laugh, and she drops her arms, reaches down, and grabs the other woman, lifting her right up off her feet. Padme can see the other woman gasp, wrapping her arms around the blonde's neck as the blonde leans back against the wall. The second woman braced on her hips, held there as if it's no feat at all. They kiss, lazy and enjoying themselves, and it's beautiful. Heat stirs in Padme's stomach, and she has to look away, focus on her braid again, even as her fingers tremble. She wants, in a way she hasn't felt in years, and that alone is alarming to think about. Half the draw with Anakin was the stolen moments, the way he was always gone and she was always waiting. But the two women on the street are familiar, fond. The newness never quite wore off for Padme, and they never reached familiarity, just the forbidden. A forbidden sort of romance that was built on misconceptions and lies, and Padme never, ever pushing anything or making a stand. She braids her hair, dresses, takes a quick inventory of the bare minimum that she'll need for the next few days. When she finally leaves the apartment, carefully making her way down the rickety, slanting stairs at the back of the building, the two women are gone, and Padme hopes that whatever happens, they at least have a good night. There's a sense of safety in the district that Padme didn't expect, even though it's sparsely populated and largely shuttered. Padme sticks to moving around at dusk and dawn when there are just enough people out to keep her from being noticeable. Like with the landlord, though, no one seems interested in asking questions. And Padme doesn't quite settle into a routine, but some of this terrifying sense of being hunted starts to fade. And then she walks into a store to find a feed from the HoloNet playing, news about a senator's disappearance running, and it all comes crashing down again. She doesn't immediately duck out of the shop and run, because that would draw more attention than anything else. It's hard to keep her hands steady as she pays for a few days' worth of food, though, and her hood is heavy and deep, but it doesn't feel like enough, even though the girl at the counter hardly glances at her. When Padme leaves, her heart is racing, and her hands are trembling, and all she can think about is the way the broadcast said, rewards are offered for her return. Sabe wouldn't have let the Naboo put a price on her return. The Queen received her resignation letter, sent out as she waited at the spaceport for a ship away. It's not her people looking for her. and if the Jedi were looking, they'd send their own agents. That means Anakin. Anakin and Palpatine, and she can't go back. She won't let them find her. Anakin knows what she did, and he was so angry when he confronted her, furious in a way she'd never seen before. If she goes back to that, some whisper of instinct and curdling fear says that she's not going to survive it. And then, like an answer to all of her worst fears, her footsteps gain an echo. Padme catches it when the feet don't stop at the bar, but keep going. Paranoia twists, and while logic says that it's simply someone heading in the same direction, Padme isn't willing to trust anything right now. She doesn't make the turn for her stairs, but quickens her step, heading straight down the street towards the tram line. There are several side streets on the way that few people frequent, and she can duck down one of them, lose pursuit in the maze of streets. She has them mostly mapped out, hopefully more than anyone searching for her, and the first turn, and the footfalls follow her away from the tram, into the darkness of an empty street. Padme curls her fingers into the sleeve of her coat, wishing for a blaster. Sundari hadn't allowed them to be brought in, though, and Padme hadn't had time to figure out how to hide one, so she'd left it behind. Shooting someone would draw attention, too, and she's trying to stay unnoticed. Better to be seen than to be grabbed and dragged back to Coruscant, though. If she has to, Padme will fight. She's best with the blaster, but that's not the limit of her skills. Determination settles, a cold wash across buzzing nerves. And she takes a breath, makes the next turn. Back towards the main street, because people might help if they think she's being attacked, and it'll be easier to get away. There's another shadowed alley ahead of her, and she ducks down it, then to the side, slipping into a narrow gap between two buildings, and then freezing, holding her breath. The man who passes her is huge and looming and human, and there's a vibroblade strapped to his hip. His eyes scan the alley, then narrow, and he hurries down the street, turns left. Padme breathes out, closing her eyes for a moment before she pushes out of her hiding spot, too visible to risk for long. The streetlights are going to come on, and then the shadows will be patchier, less reliable. Instead, she turns in the opposite direction of the man, heading for the tram at a near run. She can get to another district, vanish into the crowds there for a while, find a new place for a few days. And then something. Then she'll figure it out because she doesn't have a choice. Not one that she can stomach. Ahead of her, there's a wash of light, the lamps coming to life in the dark, and Padme swallows a curse, turns. "Hey," a man's voice calls, harsh, and Padme's heart leaps into her throat.
"Stop where you are."
Padme doesn't stop. She ducks past a pair of people walking, hears running steps pick up, and throws herself around the next corner. Right into a body, hard with muscle and tall enough that the impact only barely knocks them back. Padme goes spilling to the ground, dropping her bag, and she scrambles up, the delay too much, the footsteps close. "One second there, sweetheart," a woman says. And Padme is spun back behind broad shoulders and a fall of blonde hair, just as the woman she saw the first night barks, "Call. What the hell?" Just rounding the corner, the man from the alley jerks to a stop, takes one look at the blonde woman, and instantly backs up three steps, raising his hands.
"Arla, back off," he says, quick. "She's got a bounty on her. I saw..."
"You saw wrong." Arla crosses her arms over her chest, and Padme swallows, gripping the back of the woman's shirt. Her heart is still beating too quickly, but
for an entirely different reason now. There's a sound of frustration, but Call doesn't move.
Look, I can identify a bounty.
Yeah? Arl asks, unimpressed.
Then why are you grabbing my girl, Call?
Criff, Call says, and Padme watches him wince, with something like disbelief and hope rising.
Your girl? But she looks just like the bounty ship.
You gotta look alike, Arla says. I've been chasing her for months now, ever since she moved in across from the bar. Ask old Lady Jay, she'll tell you. There's a long pause, and then Call huffs.
Then why'd she run?
Because you're ugly, Arla tells him, and takes a half step back. Her arm curls around Padme's waist, tugging her in close. And she says, don't worry, sweetheart. He's just an idiot who needs glasses. Padme breathes out, then deliberately sinks into Arla's side, gripping her wrist.
You scared me, she says, makes it waver as though she was truly terrified,
and Call winces.
Sorry, he says. I haven't seen you with Arla before.
Padme hesitates, but the best lies have a grain of truth to them.
I don't want my ex-husband to recognize me, she says, and feels Arla's exhale, the faint tightening of the arm around her.
I thought he'd sent you.
Call pauses, then glances up at Arla, his expression darkening.
Ex? He asks.
Bant the shit. No, I just made a mistake. Wrong person.
Arla's probably right about the glasses.
I'm always right, Arla says, and she lets go, turns to face Padme as she puts herself between Padme and Call. She reaches out, holding Padme's gaze, halfway between question and dare, and Padme meets her eyes and doesn't move. The brush of Arla's thumb sliding over Padme's cheek is so warm it burns, and Padme's eyes slip closed as she leans into the touch, turns her face into Arla's palm as Arla cups her cheek, tips her chin up. It's far less of an act than she wants it to be.
Come on, sweetheart, Arla says, soft as she leans in. I know you don't like crowds right now, but why don't you come to the bar with me tonight? Then no one will make Cole's mistake again. The press of her mouth is soft, light, and it's all Padme can do not to shiver. Arla's fingers are in her hair, and all she can think of is the muscle of Arla's arms, the breadth of her shoulders, the way she lifted that other woman the first night, held her up with ease as they laughed together. The breasts that curl up from her lungs feel hot in the night air, and Padme can't do anything but say, all right. Call coughs, and he looks apologetic when he says,
I'll spread the word, too. Have people keep an eye out. If your ex is looking for you, he won't find you here.
It takes more effort than it should for Padme to drag her attention away from Arla's mouth, the press of her fingertips.
I thank you, she manages after her second too long, and offers Call a quick smile.
I'm grateful.
Take it as an apology for scaring you, Call says, and eyes Arla.
Good?
Fine, Arla allows, and she wraps an arm around Padme again, gives Call a lazy smile.
Now get lost. I want to go kiss my girl in peace.
Going, Call promises ruefully, and he makes tracks past them.
Arla turns her head to watch him go, eyes narrowed, and then snorts.
He's an idiot, but he's quick off the mark for bounties,
she says quietly. You all right?
Padme breathes out. Much better now, she says evenly. Thank you for stepping in.
Arla flashes her a smile that's almost a smirk, and she gently tugs Padme forward, back towards her street.
My pleasure. Sorry for the groping. I figured we'd better sell it.
Amused despite herself, Padme raises a brow. You're sorry for the groping, but not the kiss. Arla laughs, warm, and the sound curls right through Padme's chest.
I was counting the kiss, she says, and gives Padme a grin that's all teeth.
I'm only sorry for it if you are, though.
Padme can't quite hide her smile, but she turns her face away towards the bar.
You meant it about being seen with you, she asks.
If you're up for it, Arla agrees. You get a free meal, and the assholes around here will know better than to bother you. And I get a gorgeous woman in my lap all night.
It's shameless, but it would be a lie to say the words didn't curl like heat in Padme's stomach.
I don't think I see a downside to this deal, she says, and it takes effort to keep her voice entirely steady.
A negotiator? Arla asks, amused, but she pauses, glancing at Padme for a moment. Then, deliberate, she looks away and asks, that bruise, your ex-husband gave you that? Padme doesn't reach up to touch it, even though the urge is there.
The night before I ran, she says steadily. It's only just starting to fade, but at least the colors are less viciously ugly than they were before. Anakin had been angry, had accused her of betraying him when she told him about going to the council, and, well, she hadn't needed more reasons to run, but that was a good one.
Arla grunts, tipping her head. Bastard, she says flatly. Come on, shouldn't be too loud tonight. I think Zern's still on Concordia.
Concordia, Padme thinks, and blinks, then casts a sideways look at Arla as she gets to the door. Arla certainly looks like one of the warriors who would have been shipped off to Concordia, though Padme can't quite tell if she's old enough to have been among the first wave of deportations. But Padme hadn't thought the warriors were allowed off of Concordia once they were there, particularly if they were trying to return to Mandalore. She doesn't ask, though. Satine's words, the precise but careless, we assume they've all died out, are loud in her head, make that same edge of unease rise. If Arla is a warrior who slipped back to Mandalore, Padme isn't about to say anything. The Thalothian woman Padme saw the first night is one of only a handful of people at the bar, and she has a table staked out near the far wall, her feet propped up on a chair, and her attention sharp. Padme sees her notice them immediately, the flicker of her dark eyes from Arla to Padme, the slow assessment, the humor that rises in its wake. As Arla leads Padme across the room, she drops her feet, kicks the chair out in welcome.
You recruiting on the street now? She asks, raising a brow at Arla, and then laughs when Arla pulls a face at her.
Shut up, Ty, Arla tells her. Cole was harassing her. I told him she's with me, so play along.
Ty snorts, but she tips her drink to Padme.
Ty Cass, she offers.
Sabe, Padme says. Sabe appears in enough places that even if someone makes the connection, it won't mean much. And Sabe would lie without hesitation, say that it was her no matter who asked, so it's a safe name to give.
Nice to meet you. Ty's gaze flickers back to Arla, and she tips her head, tendrils curling. Should be just us tonight.
but I heard a rumor that the Countess has been around.
Hell of a rumor, Arla says, though she seems pleased about it, and she sinks down in an open chair, putting her back to the wall and stretching her legs out with a sigh. When Padme hesitates, Arla offers up both hands, her smirk lazy and just a little challenging.
You know, if the chair is too hard, I meant it about you sitting in my lap.
It's a dare, a joke. Padme knows that, but she meets Arla's eyes, catches her hands, and slides right into Arla's lap. Maybe it's the relief making her feel bold, or the flirting, or the line of Arla's collarbone where the neckline of her shirt dips. Or maybe it's that Padme has never been good at backing down, even when she likely should. Still, the catch in Arla's breath when Padme settles across her thighs is gratifying, and the curl of her fingers around Padme's waist is careful. She looks up, and Padme smiles, leaning in against her shoulder and draping an arm around her neck.
It was a deal, wasn't it? She asks mildly, and Arla laughs, a little breathless.
Her hand slips down to rest on Padme's thigh, just above her knee, and she drags her fingers over the thin fabric of Padme's skirt, a tease.
I guess it was, she agrees, and the warmth in her gaze makes Padme's chest feel faintly tight.
She shifts just enough to unbutton her coat, then pulls her hood back and slides the jacket free. There's no use in people seeing her with Arla if they don't see her face, and if the story of Cole's mistake is going to spread, it should make things at least slightly safer. Arla helps her slide it off, catches it and tosses it over an empty chair, then leans back again, watching Padme. Her hand is still curled loosely around Padme's thigh.
I think this deal worked out in my favor, she says, low,
and Padme takes a breath so she won't have a more visible reaction. She's never done this before, gone out somewhere and flirted and meant it. The closest is with Rush, years ago, and that had been his interest more than hers. Arla is very good at catching her interest, though, and for the first time since she left Coruscant, the urge to get away from Anakin has settled into the realization that she's free from Anakin. She's not a senator anymore, or a Jedi's secret wife, or a queen. This is just about her and what she wants. And right now, she wants Arla.
I was just thinking the same, she says with a smile, and slides her fingers across the shaved side of Arla's head, letting the blonde stubble prickle her fingertips. The longer strands are soft, curls weighed down by the length of it, and they slip like silk through Padme's fingers. Arla hums, pleased, her brown eyes dark as she watches Padme's face.
You know, she says, if you wanted to help sell it a little harder, you could kiss me again.
Just for the act, Padme asks, and the slant of Arla's grin is pure, charming mischief.
Also because I desperately want you to kiss me, she admits without hesitation, her hand sliding up Padme's back. If you like negotiations, sweetheart, I can give you...
Padme kisses her, a teasing drag of lips that drags a pleased, hungry sound up from Arla's chest.
No negotiations, Padme says softly, and the heat that's settling in her stomach feels like a brave thing, defiant. I just want to kiss you.
Good, Arla says, and draws her down into another lazy, languid kiss, nothing but want behind it.
Shut your face, Arla says loudly. That's not true.
I've seen you wear your boots backwards, Arla, and you're from Concord Dawn.
I was drunk, and you can't say it's a Concord Dawn trait just for that.
It's true. Everyone on Concord Dawn wears their boots backward. I've seen it, Ty cuts in, and the other Mandalorian, a man with gray in his hair, makes a sound of vindication. Arla huffs in offense, throwing a piece of vegetable from her mostly empty plate at Ty, who ducks it with a smirk. Padme can't quite stop herself from laughing, curled against Arla's side with her legs still hooked over Arla's thighs. The two chairs Arla pushed together for them aren't the most stable, but Arla's arm is still wrapped tight around her, so there's no risk of falling. The sound makes Arla smile, and she strokes Padme's hair out of its tight bun and braid after their kisses got too heated.
At least I wasn't raised by giants, Hoodoo, she tells the man, who rolls his eyes.
Honorable to grow up with mandolin giants, he says. Or used to be.
Arla's mouth curls, some edge of distaste and a touch of anger behind it.
Still is, she says, flat. But after a moment, she sighs faintly, shifts, and tugs Padme a little closer.
Ever been to Concord Dawn? She asks her.
Padme shakes her head. I haven't been to any other parts of the sector, she says. It's an agrarian world, right?
Still traditional, too, Arla says, faintly rueful. The governor's new Mandalorian, because the Duchess says so. But the journeyman protectors are dug in, and they're not going anywhere. No way she's deporting all of them.
Not yet, Ty corrects grimly. You've seen how she's stacking the government, driving out the old guard.
It won't happen, Arla says, but it's not stubbornness, Padme thinks.
Defiance, something personal. Arla's fingers curl in her hair, and she forces a smile, a lightness to her voice when she says,
That bastard X comes sniffing around, sweetheart, and I'll whisk you away to Concord Dawn for a holiday. My family's got a farm on the edge of a small town there. It's just me now, but it's a pretty place.
Only if her ex shows up? Hoodoo asks, amused.
Shut up, Arla tells him. I'm being gallant. What's the use of a code of honor if we don't use it for things like this?
Like picking up girls? Ty makes a thoughtful sound, though the curl of her smile is closer to wicked. I guess that's one benefit. Tell me, Sabe, can I get you hot and bothered with the list of the appropriate responses of gifts to provisions under the guidelines laid out by the Super Commando Codex? Padme hides her laughter behind one hand, pushing up like she's going to slide off the chair. Gifts of provisions, she asks. Tell me more.
Oh no, Arla says quickly, tightening her grip and pulling Padme all the way up onto her lap. If you want someone to recite the canons of honor to you, it's clearly going to be me.
Padme laughs, catching herself on Arla's chest, then leaning in to lay a light kiss on her mouth. The Super Commando Codex, she asks. Wasn't that written by Jester Muriel? Arla pulls back, brows rising.
I didn't think anyone from outside Mandalore paid attention to that kind of thing, she says. But before Padme has to answer, she smiles crookedly and says, But yeah, Jester wrote it. Rewrote the canons, too. Honor for mercenaries and a way for all of us to live together without killing each other. Noble goals.
She's a mercenary, then. Padme had guessed as much just from looking at her, but if they're sticking to the canons and the codex, that means they're true Mandalorians, going by Muriel's tenets. Padme knows the Death Watch is a faction on Mandalore still, and the new Mandalorians rule, but she hadn't thought there were still any of Jaster's faction left. You're true Mandalorians, she asks, and beneath her, Arla goes still.
Warrior factions are outlawed, Hoodoo says,
and he's gone still as well, watching her carefully.
No one trained as a Mandalorian warrior is allowed in any clan or can be a part of the government.
Arla tips her head,
holding Padme's gaze. No warriors left on Mandalore, she agrees. There's a scar on Arla's cheek that cuts down to the corner of her mouth, deep and old. Smaller scars on her knuckles, across her shoulders. Her calluses are from a blaster, and Padme knows that without hesitation. Arla is still a fighter, still a warrior, clearly still holds to Mandalorian traditions. The only odd thing is her presence here on Mandalore, hidden away in a largely empty district, but they both have secrets, apparently. My mistake, Padme says, soft, and Arla grins. She clearly knows just what Padme was thinking, and she leans forward, gives Padme a kiss that feels like thanks. Pretty and you know about Jester Muriel, she says, lighter now. I guess it was my lucky day. Looks like it's getting a little luckier, Ty says, low, and tips her head toward the door. Arla straightens, coming alert in an instant, and Padme looks as well. The woman in the doorway is a little older than her, with a heavy twist of dark hair and dark, sleekly fitted clothes that wouldn't look out of place anywhere. She sweeps a look over the bar, then crosses the floor, heading straight for their table. Under Padme, Arla is tense, almost vibrating she's strung so tight. And across the table, Hoodoo slides a hand out of sight. The woman stops just a pace away from the table, pauses. Her gaze flickers to Hoodoo, to Ty, and then slides to Arla, and she says formally, Arla Fett. Pure surprise vibrates through Padme, though she doesn't let her reaction show. Fett is a name she's only heard in one other circumstance before. The galaxy is huge, full of unrelated people with the same names, but Arla said she was from Conquered Dawn. And from what Padme remembers, Jango was, too. Maybe, Arla says lazily, and her smile is a dangerous thing. It usually depends who's asking. The woman raises a brow, but she tips her head. Ursa Wren, she offers. Of Clan Wren. That alone makes Arla's attention sharpen, and she hums. How's Vizsla, right? She asks, pointed, but Ursa meets her eyes. Rakest is outside, is all she says, quiet. And Fen Rao. We came together to show you we're willing to listen. Arla glances at Ty, then curls a hand over Padme's thigh. Sorry, sweetheart, she says quietly. Work calls. Padme obligingly slides off her lap, letting her get to her feet. Ty rises as well, tipping her head toward a door near the bar, and tells Ursa, Private room back there, if you're brave enough to risk it, Countess. Ursa smiles crookedly. I'm here, aren't I? She says, and touches the comm around her wrist. A moment later, a red-headed man and a dark-haired woman enter, keeping a wary distance between themselves. Arla watches them approach, satisfaction in her eyes, and smirks. Rook, she says, and Skull Leader himself. Arla, Rook returns, faintly rueful. It's been a long time. We should get out of sight, Fen says, and casts a glance back at the door. I'm not popular in Sundari right now. Leading a squad of Mandalorian fighters to help the Republic hasn't earned you points with the Duchess? I can't imagine why, Arla drawls, but she jerks her head towards where Ty is just unlocking the other room. Hoodoo? I'll keep Sabe company, Hoodoo says. You don't want me anywhere near discussions like this. Figured I'd offer, Arla says, tipping one shoulder in a shrug, and leads the way out of the main room, Fen and Rook close behind her. Hes Vizsla, Padme thinks, watching the door fall shut. Tor Vizsla was the leader of the Death Watch, and if she remembers right, the noble houses have smaller vassal clans attached. If Ursa is from one of those clans, making deals with Arla, a Fett, related in some way to the last Mandalore. It's no wonder Hoodoo still has one hand hidden way beneath the table, an eye trained on the door. Padme considers the implications, weighs what response to have, and hesitates.
"Shouldn't be too long," Hoodoo tells her, deliberately light. "Arla hates talking things to death. She'll be back soon."
"It's all right if I wait," Padme asks. There's a thread of something, like instinct or maybe just concern, that's knotted in her chest, and it's telling her not to leave.
"Of course," Hoodoo says, and grins. "It'll make Arla happier, for sure."
He shifts, then pushes up, sliding something way beneath his coat.
"I'm going to step outside and get a little fresh air. All right? Just be a minute."
"Of course," Padme murmurs, and watches him leave. Checking the street, she thinks, and leans forward, combing her fingers through her hair. Her heartbeat is a little quicker than before, but she doesn't feel shaky with it, just focused. If she had a blaster, she thinks, this would be a lot easier. The bar is almost empty, and as Padme waits, the last of the other customers pay their tab and wander out, drunk and cheerful with it. There's no one else except the bartender, and he turns, vanishes into the back, and doesn't reemerge. Padme knows, logically, that he could have every reason to slip out of the front of house, but she can't hear any sounds from the back, not dishes, or water, or even footsteps. It feels, she thinks, like lying alone in her room on Coruscant, knowing that Anakin was going to find out what she'd done, and nerves turn in her stomach. Then, quiet, there's a creak. The door opens to admit a tall man with graying blonde hair, his face harsh and grim. Behind him, close and ready, are a man and a woman, both tense, with their hands hidden beneath their coats. "You," the blonde man says, low, pitched, so it won't carry, and he jerks his chin at Padme. "Up." Padme lays her hands flat on the table, clear and obvious, then rises obediently. "Is something wrong, sir?" she asks, and she's not good at playing stupid. Can't drop into the character of a silly girl the way Tekla and Sabe can when they're undercover. But she can do faintly confused and alarmed. "Sorry, take her and get rid of her. Fett's here somewhere, and she's the priority," the man says impatiently. The woman moves forward, and Padme makes a sound of fear as she's grabbed, dragged forward. The woman's coat shifts, and Padme lunges. She jerks the blaster free of its holster, slams an elbow into the woman's stomach, and hits the floor as the second man grabs for her. A foot in his stomach sends him flying over her head, and she rolls, upright, aims, and has to duck as a fist swings at her face. The blonde man curses, and his blaster is up, but he's too close to shoot. With a snarl, he swings it instead, and Padme cries out as it takes her in the face. The blow is hard enough to make her vision swim dark, and she stumbles, almost falls, as blood sheets down her forehead. "Gar," the woman starts, but Padme grits her teeth, shoves back upright, and aims for the voice as she fires. There's a cry, a sound of rage, and a hand grabs her hair, hauls her back right into a blaster's barrel. Padme drives her heel down on his foot with all her strength, and when he wrenches back, she spins, aims, and fires in one smooth motion. He goes down, and Padme turns, levels the blaster at the remaining man as he tries to get to his feet. "Don't," she warns, and he freezes, then raises his hands.
same moment, the door flies open and Arla bursts out, blaster up. She freezes at the sight of Padme in the middle of the room, two bodies around her, and Padme gives her a crooked smile, but doesn't move. "I think they were followed," she says. "Hoodoo went out to check the street. They might have gotten him." Arla takes a breath, then nods. "Ty," she orders, and Ty slides past her and heads out the door at a jog, letting it fall shut behind her. In the silence, Arla sweeps a look over Padme, then asks the last man, "Prey sent you?" The man swallows. "He's dealing with matters inside his own house," he says. Arla snorts. "He's scared I'm going to challenge him for the Darksaber," she cracks. "You can tell him I'm not. I don't need a stolen Jedi weapon to be a leader." The man hesitates, but when Padme pointedly tips her head towards the door, he scrambles up and bolts, leaving the bodies of his companions behind. There's a pause, then quiet steps. Arla ignores the bodies as well, reaching up to catch Padme's chin and tilt her head carefully. "That's from a scar," she says, and strips off her long-sleeved shirt, folding it into a pad and carefully pressing it to Padme's brow. Padme reaches up to hold it, but Arla doesn't let go, watching her across the bare inches between them. "You're a good shot," she says after a second. "Your name really, Sabe?" "Padme," she says, and tips her head back, watching Arla in return. "You're rebuilding the True Mandalorians?" "I already have," Arla says, and smirks, her knuckles lightly skimming Padme's cheek. "Looking to join up, Queen Amidala? I can guarantee that being the Mandalore's wife would scare off your ex." Padme laughs. "Already jumping to wife?" she asks with amusement. "I like to dream big." Arla glances down at the dead man and says with grim humor, "Killing Gar Saxon should be more than enough to earn you a ticket to Concord Dawn with us, if you want it. Marrying not required." Padme hesitates, but she doesn't currently have any sort of plan, and it seems like a good time to leave Mandalore, given that she just killed two people. And she wants to stay close to Arla. If that's on offer, a trip to Concord Dawn seems like a good way to do it. "My ex-husband is a Jedi," she says, since Arla already knows her name, and it's not a secret she should keep if she wants this to go any further. Arla snorts, and she leans down, kisses Padme softly. "All I need to know is that you ran away from him," she says. "I've already got a slug with his name on it." Relief and something sweeter shivers through Padme, and she tangles her fingers in Arla's hair, kisses her deeply. An arm wraps around her waist, a hand grips her thigh, and she gasps as she's lifted right up into Arla's arms. Arla grins at her, immensely pleased with herself. "I figure you shouldn't be walking with a head wound," she says, "and you can hide the blaster with your hair." Padme laughs, leaning forward, and kisses Arla again. It's starting to be a habit. The end.